Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute. Do you want to build the business of your dreams without squandering time and money, stumbling around to find the right path, or making unnecessary mistakes? The market is ready and waiting for you, but that doesn't mean it's gotten any easier. Digital Commerce Institute is here to change that. Go to digitalcommerce.com and get the training, education, and community you need to start building your digital business the right way. That's digitalcommerce.com.
This is The Missing Link with your host, the insufferable, but never boring, Sean Jackson.
Welcome to The Missing Link, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Jackson, and I'm joined, as always, by the affectionate Micah Gadea. Micah, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, Sean. How are you?
You know, I'm a little down because I have allergies, and anyone who's listening who's ever suffered from allergies knows exactly how I feel.
Yeah, but it's no joke.
Yeah, the only problem is I actually have to do a podcast with them.
Things people don't think about when they sign up to do a podcast.
That's true. You know, it's funny. I called you affectionate because it is the season of Valentine's. So I know the show will be a little after Valentine's, but I thought I would just throw that in because you are a very sweet and wonderful person,
Aww,
Micah.
Oh, thank you. And I do love Valentine's
Day. I figured. So, Micah, did you see the news about what happened with LinkedIn?
I did.
It was brutal. LinkedIn, for those that don't know, the stock fell by 44%. Yep. It was a bloodbath. Now, primarily, the stock fell because the future guidance, if you want to go into the financial side of it, they said they're not going to grow as fast, and everyone freaked out and basically penalized them for it. But there was something else in that release on their earnings that really struck me. Mm-hmm. Sponsored updates is huge for LinkedIn. In fact, when I was reading the earnings report and how they're shifting their focus on sponsored updates, because it is the growth vehicle that they see in their network for marketers and advertisers, I said, Micah, we got to do a show on this.
Yeah. Quick.
So, Micah, who are we going to have today to help us in this process?
Well, I love to let you guys know that we are having someone back for a second visit. AJ Wilcox will be with us, joining us again with his amazing wisdom. He's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy. Yeah. And AJ worked with us before on an episode where we talked about advertising. And we wanted him back because we want to deep dive into how to do sponsored updates. So this episode is going to be about all the prep work you need to do, about all the things that you need to consider when using sponsored updates on LinkedIn, because dang it, they see the future growth there. And quite frankly, given its size, it's worth your time to consider. So Micah, as always, we always push a plug in for our
super secret Missing Link LinkedIn group, which you need to join if you haven't already.
Exactly. And this episode in particular, because I'm sure there will be a lot of follow-up questions to this, and we're going to post this episode in that super secret group. We're going to have a lively discussion, I'm sure, on this. So if you haven't taken the time, Micah, what do they need to do?
You can go ahead in the continental United States, text us on your mobile device to 41411. Again, that's texting us on your mobile device, 41411. The keyword is going to be my link, MYLINK. Make sure to take out that space because it will autocorrect. If you're outside of the continental United States, please email us at missinglink@rainmaker.fm. And I do know that AJ is actually part of our group and is active in there. So if you have direct questions, you can certainly reach out and we'll all be in there helping as much as we can.
Absolutely. And that's the power of the show, people, is that your voice can be heard through our super secret LinkedIn group. We don't spam you on your cell phone. We don't annoy you with email. We only communicate with you when there's something important about the show that you need to know. So take the time to do it. And when we get back from the break, we're going to have AJ Wilcox on to deep dive into everything you need to know about how to do sponsored updates successfully. So stay tuned.
The Missing Link is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. And Micah, please introduce our very special guest and friend.
Exactly. I know. He's a repeat guest, so he's totally our friend. AJ Wilcox is from B2 LinkedIn. He is like amazing at advertising on LinkedIn.
AJ, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much. Glad to be here.
All right, AJ, I'm going to be the worst client ever for you, okay? This is my role in this episode, which means I know everything. which probably means I know nothing, right? So I'm the worst client possible. Okay. So I've heard the pitch for why I need to be doing native advertising and more specifically native advertising through LinkedIn, okay? You sold me on that. I bought the thing off. I want to go through everything that someone needs to know to do it successfully. And I believe, because I know everything, that you should go ahead and do some prep work, right? So talk to me about the things that we need to be doing right away to start this whole process off.
Yeah, you bet. So very first off, you need to know what your audience is and what your offer to that audience is. So for instance, and do you have a hypothetical here? I mean, is this something you want to build an audience around?
Yeah, let's say that I'm trying to reach small business owners that sell some sort of consulting service.
Okay. And who are they selling this consulting service to?
To other businesses. So you can say your hypothetical accounting firm or law firm, or heck, given all the writers we have listening to the show, right. I sell writing services. How's that?
Okay, great. All right. So first of all, you have to understand what these what these law firms or what these professional organizations look like professionally, because you're going to have to define them by their job title, by what industry they're in, all that kind of jazz. And then you have to understand what it is you're going to offer to them. And knowing full well that users who are on LinkedIn are not surfing around with their credit card number in hand. E-commerce does not work very well. A direct response to purchase does not tend to work very well. We as LinkedIn users, we really like to engage with content. We're constantly looking to learn, and that thought leadership is what we are seeking out. So okay. That means the type of content we're going to offer them. Is this going to be a white paper? Is this going to be a guide? Is it going to be a trial offer? Is it going to be a hard sell? I mean, whatever it is, you have to understand that.
Gotcha. All right. So let's start, because it's really two parts to the prep work. And let's start with the customer data first. Does LinkedIn provide a way to upload customer data and get some segmentation analysis from that?
So not really.
Okay.
It would be fantastic if LinkedIn provided, you know, what Facebook and Twitter have in terms of their custom and tailored audiences, where you can upload email addresses and just advertise to them. LinkedIn does not have this. So we're limited to our segmentation by simply what we can do in LinkedIn's dashboard. And by saying simply, I'm kind of undermining it a little bit. It's the best B2B targeting there is out there. It's fantastic, but we can't get quite as granular as email addresses.
Okay, so let's do this. I have a customer data set of, let's say, 200 customers, okay? Should I be going in and using the advanced search tool to start to build up queries that start to reflect those 200 customers that I'm looking at? In other words, I put in the query and I start to notice that my customers who I've hopefully connected with are starting to show up in that list. Would that be one way to approach segmentation?
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant way. I mean, I've actually approached this several different ways with several different clients where, you know, for some we'll say, hey, you already have a database of who it is, who is your best customer, because you already have these customers. Let's go and look at their individual profiles and see what they look like. What skills do they have listed? What groups are they members of? What are their job titles? What industries are they in? All these types of things that would help you kind of generate your audience.
Yeah.
And the flip side to this is that you can go and build them from scratch. You can say, you know, right now we're in with a whole bunch of law firms, but, you know, we'd really like to get in with dentists or with doctors. I mean, you can do that kind of thing and say, let's leave our historical audience behind and go after this new audience.
Right. And I think that's the real trick, is to spend some time ahead of thinking about that audience that you're trying to reach out and using the current customer base that you have now as, you know, the commonalities. Find those guys. Take your top 20, top 100, top whatever, and start to look at their LinkedIn profiles and jotting it down. It is some grunt work, but the good news is it doesn't require a lot of brain power either, right? You know, it's more of just spending time to do it. Okay. So I'm building up my target features, if you will. Let's call them features. I have a target features that I'm trying to reach. All right. Now, The next thing is, because again, I'm the client that knows everything, my next inclination would be to figure out the second part of your equation. I would probably start writing some things on pulse and seeing if those pieces start to resonate with the target that I defined in step one. What do you say?
So I do think that's a really smart idea. I mean, ideally what you want to do is get enough of a read from your audience about the types of content and the types of messaging you're using to understand what it is that they are willing to engage with. Ideally, what you'll have is, you know, let's say 15 company page posts that you've already done, and you want to look across those and, you know, find the commonalities for the things that performed the best and then mimic those in your advertising. Now, I will say, I think one of the coolest features of advertising is this ability to test and iterate rapidly. That means you can put together two or three variations right now, run them as a test. Because you're paying on a pay-per-click basis, you're not paying for ads that don't get clicked on. And so you can really get data very quickly about what people are willing to engage in.
Let's go back for a second, because I know you're jumping ahead, dang it. I want to go through this because what you just said, there is a clarification I want to make. I tend to think of pulse as individual, and I tend to think of company page updates as coming from the obvious company page, right? Yes. They are distinct ecosystems though, right? Because people who follow your company page will see those updates versus your personal context that will see pulse. Am I hearing that right? So if that is the case, should I be in pulse or should I be updating on my company page? Where am I focusing my time to do this test?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with pulse specifically, you're right. It's a little bit of a different beast. No matter where you have an audience, I would leverage that audience. So if you have the biggest audience on pulse, and let's say you have people who are in professional services following you on LinkedIn, and therefore they're seeing your pulse articles, great. You can get data from that. If you have more people who are following your company, that's more of an apples to apples comparison, because a sponsored update is realistically just a company page share that is being shown to a new audience.
And I think this is important because there's a lot of solo practitioners that listen to the show. And I do think there's a distinct difference, because I know a lot of solo practitioners will not be focusing on their company page because they're, you know, them, and they're focusing on pulse. And I think you make a really good point. It's find the biggest chunk of where your audience is. So if you've got a lot of people on your company page following, and maybe you need to build up that company page before you even start to think about sponsored updates, is really try to build up that following. Or you use pulse. And again, the idea though, and I think this is the crucial part, the idea is to test content ideas, because there's no penalty and actually no cost for testing content ideas on your company page or on your pulse post.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So again, I told you I'm a great client. I know everything. So now what I want to do is I've tested out a few pieces. And I think the other point that I want to get on is I'm following your advice. I'm testing different ideas, et cetera, realizing I don't have a credit card in hand, which means that post that I'm going to pay to get in front of people, it's probably going to have a landing page tied to it. Yes?
Exactly. Yes.
So talk to me about landing pages, because I think that sometimes is where a lot of effort fails, is they spend all sorts of money and they drive them to a page that doesn't convert. So talk to us briefly about landing pages, top considerations.
Great. All right. So initially, there are two hurdles that you have to jump over with LinkedIn advertising. The very first, the hurdle to jump over, is getting people to actually click on your ads. Because if you put something out there that no one cares about, you'll never even find out what no one will ever get to your landing page. You won't ever find out what that landing page's conversion rate looks like. So that's your first hurdle. The second is, once you have people clicking on your ad, now you know you have to get those people who are on that landing page to convert with your offer. If you have a development team, you know, we're talking to an audience of solo practitioners, so there are a lot who don't have this. But if you have someone who's handling your website and you've already created landing pages in the past, then great. You have a good idea of, you know, what your template tends to convert at, and, you know, you can play with messaging. If you're a solo practitioner, I would recommend something like a lead pages or a Unbounce, one of those types of services where you can very quickly create from a template that's already proven to have a pretty good conversion rate, and simply just edit it. Lots of drag and drop, and build your landing page around that. For those who have extreme budgets or maybe kind of cheating towards enterprise. There's a science called conversion rate optimization, and there are people who simply take landing pages and run tests on them to find the elements that contribute the most towards your conversion, and you can do a lot of testing to find the optimal page experience.
You know, it's funny because this is a shameless plug, but obviously the Rainmaker platform that we sell, I will tell you, our development team spends an inordinate amount of time on the concept of landing pages, A/B testing, etc. And so if you've got Rainmaker platform, which many of our audience does, by all means, that's built in there. And that's the point of the landing pages. Lead pages and unbounce, those are great if you don't already have Rainmaker. Shameless plug aside. Now,
yes, if you have Rainmaker, use it.
And I agree you need to make sure that landing page has been vetted a little bit. And I think that's where some of, again, where the testing comes in. Can you get one person to get to that landing page and fill out the form, whatever that call to action is? But there is something else that you said on the last time you were here that has stuck in my brain and is constantly being reinforced. You can have the best landing page in the world, but if it doesn't show up on mobile, then who cares? And AJ, why is mobile so important?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So sponsored updates are the only ad unit on LinkedIn that is available from a mobile device. And because traffic is increasing so heavily on LinkedIn from mobile devices, from the mobile app, that means usually, depending on your audience, if it's more techie or less techie, but with a normal audience, you'll usually see about 65% or more of your traffic from a sponsored update coming in from mobile devices. So if your landing page is amazing, but you load it on a mobile device and it looks like a Picasso painting, you're done.
Exactly. And that I can't stress enough, because all of what we've been talking about, folks, we've been talking about targeting an audience, testing concepts and ideas, and then, of course, actually creating the landing page. But I will tell you, if that landing page isn't mobile responsive, if that landing page isn't optimized for conversion, everything will be wasted. You will be wasting every dime you spend without at least having those three elements down. Okay, let's get this moving forward, because there's a lot to cover through it. All right, I've targeted my audience. I've got good ideas on their skill sets, their groups, their titles, their functions, etc. I went ahead and tested out some content ideas, either as pulse posts or as company update pages, and they're doing fantastic. I'm excited. So now I want to go through, and I actually want to start to execute on this campaign. So it has to be in a company page, correct?
Yes. And it doesn't have to actually show up on the company page, but it does have to be tied to one.
Okay.
And the distinction here is something between what's called a sponsored update and what's called a direct sponsored content. Now, it's a terrible name. Whoever at marketing at LinkedIn came up with that. Anyway, we'll have some words. But sponsored update versus direct sponsored content. The idea tends to confuse people a lot, but let me lay it out for you, you know, how it came about. When I was very first using sponsored updates, I was one of the very first people to use them. I had a problem, and that was when I'm posting a lot of sponsored updates across multiple audiences, I would be posting something very similar. You know, let's say you're running even just one A/B test and you're talking to, hey dentists, I have something awesome that you need to know about. If you're running an A/B test where you're saying, okay, on our next one, instead of saying, hey, dentists, we'll say, hey, medical professional, or whatever it is, and you want to test those two things, when you publish both of those ads, you have just spammed your following. Anyone who follows your company page is going to see two ads right in a row, and they're going to say, wow, I don't want to follow this company anymore because I can't understand why they would post two things that look the same. And so that was a problem. And so LinkedIn understood this. They followed Facebook's lead because Facebook has dark posts. And what they said is, okay, we're going to allow you an ad unit that does not show up on your company page. It's still tied to it. When people see it, they'll still be able to, there will still be a little bit of a call to action to follow that company page. But when you post it, it goes only to the audience that you're paying to show it to and not to those who are already following your company page.
Excellent. Boy, that helps out a lot. Okay. So I get in and I go to the ad. So I get my content and I go to sponsor update, right? In my company page, correct? And
yeah.
And I'm asked to put in, the first thing I'm asked is to put in a campaign name, correct? And then a language that I want it to be targeted to, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Any advice on campaign name? Obviously something that you can keep, but no one sees that, right? Campaign name is not something that's going to appear anywhere except to the person who's putting the ad together, right?
Exactly. It's for you. It's to help you understand. Now, a lot of what I've seen, people tend to do one of two things with campaign nomenclature. They will either name it after the audience that they're going after, which I believe is the proper way, or they will name it after the piece of content that they're sharing. They might call it like dentist ebook or something right. like that. LinkedIn tends to weigh its algorithm, its relevancy score algorithm, very heavily towards past history and interaction with the ads. And so what my goal is when I'm creating a campaign, I want to build this audience that I can reuse for a long time. So my campaign, I'm going to name it, if we're going after, let's say we're going after, after law offices, I might call this, law industry senior titles or executive seniorities in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that might be the name of my campaign. And you can shorten it so it looks more cryptic or whatever. But that's what I do. And then that means that as I come out with new content that I want to share with these audiences, I'm just going to pause the content that's already showing to those audiences, and I'm going to put the new ones in, and I'm always going to keep that audience fresh.
Got it. Okay. So I give it a name that is helping me track the audience that I'm reaching with that campaign. I'm using the language to the audience that I want to get. So if you're in Germany, you're using German. If you're in the United States, you're using English. Let's say you're a U.S. company targeting overseas. So that language selection does mean that you're presenting in English or German or whatever language that you're targeting. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. It's the target language. This is the language that you're going to be writing the ads in. Uh-huh. It's not the language that is going to be visible to you from the ads platform.
Got it. Okay. So the next thing that happens is I'm presented with a list of updates that have been added to my company page, and I can see the likes. I can see the comments, which again goes back to the point of testing out ideas to see what is resonating. But you also have that option of creating new sponsored content. Correct? So you don't have to pick one of your already. You can create up a new one.
Yes. So this is one of my biggest pet peeves right here is that all of the ad platforms that I know of will prompt you to create an ad. They will prompt you to choose your messaging before you've even defined who your audience is.
Yeah.
Now, as a marketer, I know that I don't even know what my message is going to be unless I know who I'm talking to. And so the very first thing I do when I'm on the screen that you're on, I scroll all the way to the bottom and I hit skip. I don't even want to talk about messaging yet until I've defined exactly who it is I'm speaking to.
Got it. Okay. Very important. Very important. Love that idea. Okay. So let's go on. So I'm going down to the bottom page. I'm playing along at home. And now what is presented to me is the targeting, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Right. This is the fun part. This is the reason why we're on LinkedIn. So very first off, what you need to do from the targeting screen is you have to choose a geography. Everything else hinges off of the geography here. So you can't just skip that part and go and start defining things. What I want you to see here, and if anyone else is following along as we do this, something really cool about the ads platform, in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, it says your estimated target audience. And if you haven't selected anything, it's going to show you 400 million plus LinkedIn members. Now, pay attention to that number because everything that we add into this targeting is going to change that number, and it's effectively going to tell you how many people are in your target market. It's telling you about your total addressable market, which from a marketing standpoint is really helpful to understand. This is cool from just an audience research perspective, let alone advertising.
And it's nice too, because you can really zero down because most people will put a city, state, or at least when I say most people, the United States, but they will put down, a very specific place in the world that they are located. And again, you can go in, not just to US, you could go into Texas, you can go into Dallas, you could be very, very specific on that geo-targeting, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you are limited a little bit on LinkedIn because, in most states, we have maybe one or two or sometimes three metro areas. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of limited to that metro area. But if you want to hit multiple metros, you can start at the state level. You can go to the country level. You have a lot of control. It just doesn't go quite as granular as something like maybe AdWords would.
Gotcha. So you're really talking about MSAs, metropolitan areas, where
yes.
I could say the Dallas-Fort Worth area as opposed opposed to Richardson, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. All right, so I put that in. What do I do next? I start to think about, because again, I should have this for my targeting up ahead of time, right? If you follow the prep work, you're looking at that audience. One of the commonalities is where they're located, right? Now, most people who sell online will look, you know, in a broader spectrum, but some will look into the MSA. All right, what do I do next?
Okay, so you can see, and I'm following along here. I just added my geography as being the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas. And now I can see my estimated target audience size just shrunk to 2.68 million,
okay.
Which is, you know, we've gone from 400 million to 2.68. Very cool. Now we can start talking about who these people are and how to reach them and watch what happens to our audience as we shrink that.
Now, I want to focus. Now, I almost everything here, you know, again, if you're doing your prep work right, you'll probably know some of the job titles, et cetera. But there was something that you shared before that really blew me away. Member skills. Mm-hmm. That really changed my thinking, because we all know that endorsements, which are essentially skill sets, are really the currency now that people are using versus recommendations, right? You know, just
yes.
Click a button and endorse. But that endorsement is to a skill, and those skills are tied to a profile. And so member skills is something that actually probably means more than job title. So,
yeah, in some cases, I really do think that's the case. I mean, part of the issue is, you know, my title, mine's going to say founder or evangelist or something like that for me, but I'm going to have a skill that says something like, you know, because I'm very technical as a marketer. And so I might have a skill that talks about SQL or, you know, what some other technical skill. If someone's trying to sell me something having to do with SQL or more of the technical side of marketing, they wouldn't be able to target me by my job title or my job function and know that I have that. Skills is a great way to hit that. And skills can be quite broad or they can be very specific. And so there's a lot of flexibility in targeting them.
All right. So I'm going through now, and since we were talking about lawyers, let's use lawyers. So I went from 2.6 million and I just type in attorneys, right, as a skill set. And then by doing that, it dropped it down to 14,000. Okay.
Yes.
Do you recommend more skills the better? Is it an and or an or operator? Meaning I want this and this, or I want this or this?
Okay. Good question. There's a huge distinction here. So in between the different fields, so between location and skills, for instance, that's going to be an and. So we're going to say you have to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and you have to have the skill of an attorney. But when you're adding a whole bunch of skills in between, those become or operators. So if we add in something like contract law into here as well, now I have, you can see what's happened to my target audience from attorneys, where I think we had something like 14K. When I added contract law, it went up to 15K. So you can see my audience is expanding the more skills I add.
Gotcha. So let's talk about this one area, because again, how much should I put in there? I mean, in other words, what is my, everybody wants a goal, I guess. And do you want it as big as possible? Do you want it as small as possible? Do you want it as fine-tuned as possible? As you're using these filters, if you will, company size, job title, skills, blah, 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 how much are you going to be putting into that campaign?
Yeah, really, really good question here. So the distinction here, I think, is kind of between what LinkedIn recommends and what practitioners will recommend. So LinkedIn will tell you that you should have an audience size of at least 300,000. The reason why they suggest such large audiences is pretty obvious. I mean, they don't make money unless you're targeting a large audience. I tend to err on the very small side. So we're talking right now about a campaign that has 15,000. On LinkedIn, you can't physically target anyone less than 1,000. But when you're around that area, it's really hard to gather enough data. I mean, your ads aren't going to be clicked on by enough people to really get the ball moving. So I really like campaigns that are between, let's say, 10 and 40,000 people in them.
Gotcha. All right. So let's go through the next section of the screen, which is I'm seeing two things. Help my campaign reach new audiences, similar to the targeting criteria. And then I see a box that says beta, deliver my campaign to target audience beyond the LinkedIn feed. Talk to me about those two options there.
Woohoo! That means that you're included on the beta. Congratulations. So both of these options here, the very first one is called audience expansion. This is what I would say is for the lazy advertiser. If you launch a campaign and you're reaching, let's say we're reaching these 15,000 people that we're currently looking at. If we're reaching them and having a lot of success and you don't want to do anything except click a button to just have these ads viewed by more people, what you can do is you can click that box. It's enabled by default. So I like to disable it whenever I see it come up. But you know what that is it goes out and finds people who are similar to those that you're already targeting. And it's a very quick and easy way to add, you know, maybe it's 10 to 20 to 30% more audience to your existing audience. Now, to me, I'm really anal about how I do targeting and attribution. And so all that box tells me is, do you want me to muddy your targeting and make it difficult for you to understand who you're going after? And so I uncheck that. But for a more simple advertiser, someone who's not in here every day playing around, maybe that's a good option to hit.
Okay. And talk to me about the beta button that may or may not be on your screen.
Yes. So my guess is this is rolled out probably to most people by now. But what this is doing is it's asking you if they can show your sponsored updates on different sites besides LinkedIn. Now, they took their cue from Google with Google's display network, the GDN, and this has been incredibly successful for them. So what LinkedIn is saying is, hey, we have a cookie on your computer identifying you as a lawyer in our Dallas-Fort Worth area, for instance. Now, when you're going around the web, if that cookie's on your computer and you come to a site that LinkedIn has partnered with, you can see those ads off of there. Now, to me, I don't think that this matters a whole lot because, first of all, that their partnerships are not strong yet because this is so new. And not that the partnerships aren't strong, but there probably aren't a whole lot of sites there. So whether you click this or don't click it, you might see a variation in maybe 5% of your impressions. Maybe you'll get 5% more or something, but this isn't something I would care about yet.
Okay. Now, we are at the limit of the show. So, AJ, we're going to have you back and we're going to do part two of this series because I am just absolutely enthralled on what we've been talking about. And I want to have a second episode specifically for the remaining part of this, which I think is absolutely crucial, which is how to set your budgeting, how to set your testing, et cetera. So AJ, we're going to have you back on the show for part two of how to do sponsored updates the right way. Sound good?
I'm coming back, baby.
So awesome.
Everybody listen in to the second part of this as we continue our journey on to creating up powerful sponsored updates. Talk to you next time on The Missing Link.
You have just experienced The Missing Link exclusively on Rainmaker.fm.